This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 20th of July 2018. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 20th of July 2018, which this week have been edited by Liz and Gordon Legg. Your readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Peter Walker.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter Keith Vincent, standing in for Ros Lydiard. The main headlines this week: shop owner overcomes double raid to carry on. MP says Andover Road diversion could change. And teenager, 17, jailed over M3 firebombing. So, Claire, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Certainly. Shop owner overcomes double raid to carry on. A Winchester business owner has seen a surge of support from customers after a raid forced her shop to close for several weeks. Donna Baish, owner of Donna Lane Fine Jewellers, had to pay £15,000 out of her own pocket for repairs after burglars left the Parchment Street outlet looking like an earthquake had hit. But she is battling on to rebuild the business. Last Thursday, Mark McWilliams and Samuel Johnson were jailed for their part in the burglary, where jewellery valued at between £30,000 to £50,000 was stolen. McWilliams, who's 37, of Warlock Close, Southampton, was jailed for 2 years and 8 months, and Johnson, who's 36, of Cripstead Lane, St Cross, Winchester, for 2 years and 6 months. The pair pleaded guilty to the burglary overnight on January 3 to 4, while McWilliams also pleaded guilty to handling stolen goods. Winchester Crown Court heard how the store was targeted first in December when burglars got into the store through a hole in the roof, and then again in January when they forced their way in through the back door. Ellie Fargin, prosecuting, read out a victim impact statement from Miss Baish. She said, "I don't think whoever did this has the slightest idea how much this has affected me. It looked like an earthquake had happened." The court also heard how McWilliams had 27 previous convictions, while Johnson had 16. Sentencing, Judge Richard Parks, QC, said, "You heard the owner's victim impact statement, the appalling effect it has had on her business. Whether or not the shop will recover, we have no idea. The consequences for the proprietor have been catastrophic." After the hearing, investigating officer PC Helen Carthew said, "They are professional criminals who have nearly lost somewhere in their business. I don't think they had realised the impact it has had. They think it was a non-dwelling. They don't think there is a victim." In a statement, Ms. Beige said, "It was a huge relief to know the culprits were caught and have been sentenced, and full praise goes to Hampshire Police." She added, "There have been some real positives. I decided that rather than repair the damage, I would refurbish the shop. And that, and a surge of support from our customers, has given us a great few months of trade. We are so grateful to everyone who in all sorts of small ways has helped us get back up again."
MP says Andover Road diversion could change. Developers behind the Kings Barton scheme have accepted that the decision to divert Andover Road could change, according to Winchester's MP. Steve Bryan made the comments following a visit to Carla Holmes Kings Barton with Regional Managing Director Nick Twine and the company technical director Rob Westwood. Plans to divert the major Andover Road through the site have been controversial and a hot topic during May's City Council elections. Mr. Bryan said, I was keen to raise the future of the Andover Road. I was pleased that Carla understand that the Hampshire County Council Movement Study, referring to the Winchester Movement Strategy, is key here, and accept that Hampshire County Council Highways can change things if they wish. Work to produce a movement strategy, which will set out the long-term goals for traffic in the city over the next 20 to 30 years, is still ongoing. During the visit, Mr. Bryan was also briefed on the development's master plan and heard from Carla on key development milestones achieved to date, as well as how a second phase of homes has been accelerated to meet demand. Kings Barton will see 2,000 homes created around a centre of shops, leisure and community facilities, as well as a new school and public open space. However, as previously reported, the opening of the new Barton Farm Academy Primary School was put back because of the construction rate of the houses had been slower than forecast. Mr. Bryce said, "I was also intrigued to see from the ground how the development will progress, not least the plot of the new Barton Farm Primary School, where I am a trustee of the Academy Trust at Winchester University, overseeing plans to make this a fantastic eco-school. Kings Barton will be developed over the next 15 years with a planning application for the next phase of between 200 and 300 homes due this autumn." Nick Twine, Carla Regional Managing Director, said, "Kings Barton is a flagship development for Carla, and we were delighted that Mr. Bryan was able to join us and see firsthand the progress. The development is proving to be a popular choice for prospective homeowners, with sales strong and our first homeowners settling in." Carla declined to respond to Mr. Bryan's comments on Andover Road.
Teenager 17 jailed over M3 firebombing. A teenager who threw firebombs onto the M3, bringing the motorway to a standstill for more than 11 hours, has been jailed. It comes after former public schoolboy Nicholas Elger, 17, pleaded guilty to two arson offences as well as blackmails, burglaries and thefts. Appearing at Winchester Crown Court last Thursday, Elger was jailed for 4.5 years after he created incendiary devices and threw them from the motorway bridge near Junction 10 twice. The first incident took place on September the 16th, then on September the 23rd. It resulted in the motorway being closed for around 11 hours, leaving people stranded and creating travel chaos as drivers tried to divert. It is estimated to have lost the local economy £40 million. Prosecutor Tessa Hingston added that Elger had told psychiatrists, "I do not regret the incident. I regret not doing them differently and not succeeding in killing." Then followed a series of burglaries at Winchester College, where Elger had been a pupil, in which he stole computer equipment and caused damage, costing the college £52,000 in total. He then began blackmailing the college, demanding they hand over several thousands of pounds in online currency, Bitcoin. Despite hiding his identity online, Elger, of Wharf Hill, Winchester, was discovered after teachers recognised his handwriting on an envelope. Questions had been raised about Elger's mental health at the time, after claiming voices told him to kill. Prior to the hearing, he had been a subject of interim hospital orders detaining him at a mental health facility. However, after being cleared for sentencing by doctors, Robert Morris, mitigating, told the court that his actions had been caused by his, quote, immaturity, unquote, and that his behaviour had turned into, quote, an extraordinary out-of-character spiral, unquote. Also sentencing Elger to 12 months in prison for the burglaries and 3 years for the blackmail, both concurrently, Judge Keith Cutler, the recorder of Winchester, said, "This is not just naughty schoolboy behaviour. You have confessed to psychiatrists that you intended to kill people. I have come to the conclusion that there is a significant risk of harm to the public from you." Describing Elger, Judge Cutler added, "He is very intelligent, possibly the most able chemist the college has produced in recent years." Elger will also spend 4.5 years on licence following his release from prison for the two counts of arson, being reckless as to whether life is endangered. However, Judge Cutler did not give additional sentences for the two counts of theft, in which he stole items from a Tesco store in preparation for each of the motorway incidents. The court heard that on the day before each of the motorway incidents, Elger went into the Winchester supermarket and stole items which were used to create the incendiary devices.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, followed by Christian comment, letters, historical items, Chronicle editorial comment, first person and Belgarum. And then we'll do the announcements and what's on. So we start with the death announcements this week. Collins, Philip John Collins, who died peacefully at home, aged 91. Dunford, June Dunford, died suddenly and unexpectedly, aged 88. Gale, Harry Richard Gale, died on the 7th of July, aged 98. Patterson Moutre, Major Terence Patterson Moutre, who died on July the 9th. Pennycock, Lewis Pennycock, died peacefully at Moorside Nursing Home, aged 101. Phillips, June Elizabeth Phillips, who was a retired midwife, and she's died following a battle with motor neurone disease, aged 69. And Stevens, Paul Stevens, died on the 8th of July, aged just 30. Now we have Christian comment, Claire.
This week, the Reverend Philip Crinker has headed it, Letting Our True Colours Show. Your true colours are beautiful, like a rainbow. Cyndi Lauper's song told us not to be discouraged, not to be afraid to let our true colours show. When we are truly loved, it is because of, not despite, who we really are. The colour and excitement of the FIFA World Cup has been one of the joys of recent weeks. In sport, as in other fields where we challenge ourselves, we show better our true colours. We see whether we can be courageous, whether we can be truthful, whether we can be kind, whether we can keep hoping when hope seems to be gone. England's performance in the World Cup confounded their critics and gave the country's mood a boost. When they finished their extra time with Croatia, the country had a range of reactions. We were disappointed to leave the tournament with some hopes unfulfilled. But we were also proud. We rejoiced at what the team had achieved, the football they had played, and the character they and the management team had shown. Gareth Southgate's leadership and character, in particular, have inspired many people. There were several iconic images. His hug for the Colombian goalkeeper, David Ospina, at the end of the penalty shootout. His lifting up his exhausted players to put them literally back on their feet. His wife's hug for him after the semi-final. These images show a different colour to the one which people might have expected from elite footballers and their coaches. They show a different colour to the one which some people might expect of us supposedly stiff upper lip English. But perhaps in these actions we have started once again to let our true colours show, and that is God's call to each person and each community. For the creation waits with eager longing for the children of God to be revealed. It waits for each of us to be revealed as who we really are, not separated from our God, but reconciled to him in his Son Jesus, finding the fullness of our humanity in him. This does not happen all at once. We have to show that most unpopular of virtues, patience. As St. Paul goes on to say in the letter to the Romans, who hopes for what is seen? But if we hope for what we do not see, then we wait for it with patience. What we had had in the last few weeks is a sign of hope. With patience and faith, there is more to be revealed. Our nation will recover a sense of who we are and what we have to offer the rest of the world. It may not happen tomorrow or in 2019, but it will happen. Don't be discouraged. In a world full of people, we can lose sight of it. But the world will see our true colours shining through. Let's not be afraid to let them show. Beautiful, like a rainbow. And that was written by the Reverend Philip Crinks.
Thank you. Now we're moving on to letters to the editor. Richard, you got first.
Yes, and the first letter comes from Annie Saunders of Alsford, and it's called Playing a Part. Sir, in reply to Robert Marshall of Houghton Stockbridge, it's important to get back to basics in relation to new housing here in Alsford. Chronicle Letters, July the 12th. 7 years ago, the government set out its housing requirements, and Alsford, Croydon Common, Bishops Waltham and Wickham were asked to provide 500 new homes apiece. Perhaps Mr Marshall thinks we in Alsford should have refused to draw up a local plan. The result of that refusal would have been twofold. Whitehall would have intervened in some way, and developers would have taken advantage of the lack of a plan and piled in, resulting in a myriad of small developments with no social, housing or amenities. The advantage of the Alsford local plan, which has been approved by the inspectorate, is the revitalisation of an area known here as the Dean, comprising a pleasant road leading down to the river, marred by an unsightly and outdated industrial estate. Development is now underway for sheltered housing, small terraced houses and flats, a brand new veterinary hospital, and a much-needed car park. The local plan stipulated that loss of employed space should be compensated by a business park at the far side of the Sunhill development, abutting several acres of managed open space, and hopefully new and much-needed accommodation for Alford's scout troop. As for the traffic proposals, which are understandably controversial, the plan proposes a link onto the A31 bypass so that commuters from the new estate can access the bypass, thus avoiding the town. Nothing, Mr. Marshall, is perfect in this world, and people living near the new development will suffer disruption in the years to come. Mr. Marshall asks, do we need 300,000 houses per annum? As I started typing this, I heard on the radio that net migration into this country in the past 12 months was around 280,000. So, yes, sadly, we do require a substantial increase in our housing stock, and Alsford is playing its part. Annie Saunders, East Street, Alsford.
And this from Peter Rees of Winchester, entitled Nursery Damage. Sir, with the inevitable round of staged photo opportunities, Steve Brine again shows himself as the poster boy for Tory cuts in education by visiting Lanton's Nursery, Chronicle, June 28th. He also has a nerve to bring another master cutter of the state education service, Nadeem Zardawi. This minister instructed the removal of £4 million worth of government funding which had supported the education of deaf children. Steve Brine knows as much as anybody that the state of education in the UK is in a very serious condition. Teachers are leaving because the government does not properly consult the profession. It does not care about the bureaucratic workload, and it does nothing to address burnout. Lanterns, a surviving example of an outstanding nursery school, shows exactly what can be done to defeat a government hell-bent on destroying proper high-quality early years education. The government removed money from this sector to subsidise daycare, preschool provision and day nurseries. These are not nursery schools where the foundations of lifelong education are practised by highly skilled, qualified teachers. Lanterns relies on an early years funding formula, but this type of high quality education with qualified early years teachers and practitioners is expensive. Mr. Brine ignores any dissenting opinion. Time after time, he refuses to listen to points of view that do not accord with his own. He represents only himself and ignores the damage this government is doing.
World Cup defeat in British manner. So, when I just missed the headlines on the TV recently, just for a moment when I saw the strained features of the newsreader and listened to her somber voice, I feared that a disaster was being reported. Thankfully, I was relieved to hear that a team of Englishmen chasing a ball had lost a football match. To give them their due, they accepted defeat in a true British manner. They had done their best and did the country proud. I know nothing about the sport, as readers may gather, but I do think it brings the countries of the world together and may help to put our differences aside for at least a short time. Daphne E. Smith, The Pastors, Cheriton.
Mary Simmons of Kingsworthy describes what she calls a waste of time. I went to the drop-in meeting on July the 12th concerning the proposed development of 35 houses on land near Burnett Lane, Kingsworthy. What a waste of time. There were 9 posters displaying a minimal amount of information, no leaflets to take away and read, and the site plan on the middle table did not show the Springvale Road Hook Pit Farm Lane junction. There was no one from Hampshire County Council representing traffic, so I couldn't discuss my major concern that the increased flow of traffic created by the new development will cause hazardous conditions, particularly at the already congested and dangerous junction of Hook Pit Farm Lane and Springville Road at Tesco's. The housing representatives gave bland assurances that the size of this development will be broadly the same as the one already approved for 25 houses. How broadly? And that there will be no new demand on the local primary school because the new residents' children will already be going there. Really? How do they know that? I'm not convinced that we need more housing in Kingsworthy now that we have new houses at Barton Farm and Loveton Lane. The council says that this is a compromise proposal which will bring the rest of the land into council control so that it will be a public open space. Why can't they simply not allow any more development on the land? Kingsworthy is rapidly becoming an overcrowded suburb of Winchester and not the peaceful village it was. Other issues which concern me are the adequacy of drainage in an area which is known to flood and how wildlife and plants will be affected. I look forward to seeing the application when it's submitted, when I hope these and other issues will be addressed in detail. Mary Simmons, Springvale Road, Kingsworthy.
And this from Eileen Berry of Hairstock on the collective will. Sir, I feel that we are very short sometimes of good news and good deeds. I was invited to Wheat Community Centre to the beginning of their 3-day festival. The events of the first evening, Friday, were wonderful. It was also the opening of their outside decking. The reason I am so proud of all the effort that went into the building of the decking is because it was done and completed by members of the club, who are also professional craftsmen. They all pulled together and gave hours of their time for nothing, just for the community. It proved to me that collectively you will and can succeed. As the weather has been so incredibly kind, there were choirs, every conceivable games for children, tombola, face painting, you name it, it was there. And that was just the beginning. I have to give tremendous thanks to the organisation. Not only have they got their clubhouse, they also have a continual use of their rooms by outside organisations. Their halls are used for judo, dancing, kickboxing, keep fit, all manner of things that I can't name. If we are singing the praises of the good people of this community centre, we also have to thank the City Council for helping as well. Saturday was an international day of Gurkha dancing, a barbecue, a group in the evening, activities all day. It was full of life and laughter. Sunday was no different. When we say community, often that word is claimed that the community supported something. In this case, the community came in their droves. I do understand that they wish to continue to improve so that families can bring their children to a better, more comfortable and more accommodating place for recreation. So there is more to come. I say all power to your good works. May it continue.
This is headed Devastating Plan. Thank you for raising public awareness of the proposed 32,000 laying hen egg production facility. Chronicle, July the 12th. Winchester residents may be interested to know that our concerns are wide-ranging and there are significant gaps and omissions in the applicant's submission to Winchester Planning. If permitted, harmful emissions from this development would have a devastating ecological and environmental impact on crab wood, bluebell wood, an ancient woodland, irreplaceable habitat, and designated site of special scientific interest. The building, 140 metres long, would be visible from Clarendon Way, harm the landscape, and not be effectively screened. Even after 5 years, the maximum height of screening trees would be 3 metres, less than half the height of the building. Natural England, Campaign to Protect Rural England, Woodland Trust, and Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust have all objected to this application. There is no odour management plan which commits to achieving minimal odour levels. Likewise, there is no formal industrial noise assessment which takes account of all noise associated with the prospective facility. Odour modelling assumes good management of the unit, yet no management plan has been provided. It also takes no account of individual sensitivities to odour. This year's weather patterns, local topography, the collection and spreading of chicken waste on Vale farmland, and the 4-week cleaning period at the end of each production cycle when emissions are at their peak. A waste management plan has also not been provided. The welfare of the hens cannot be safeguarded due to the low levels of staffing proposed, and the absence of on-site 24-hour supervision of the hens. Traffic movements are understated and would include 16.5-metre articulated vehicles, the largest allowed on UK roads, travelling along Enmill Lane and crossing Sarum Road. Other concerns include the step change of introducing intensive-type farming into the Winchester countryside and the well-documented health risks associated with the emission of poultry dust particles into the local area. We hope that Winchester residents will join us in opposing this facility. Lynn Gibson and Mary Hill, on behalf of Crabwood Action Group, Sarum Road, Winchester.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. And now we're stepping back in time. 200 years, I think, Claire, first.
Indeed. Monday, July the 20th, 1818. On Tuesday last, a swarm of bees suddenly alighted on a boy's head in the neighbourhood of Penzance and remained there for a considerable time. The boy, almost terrified to death, was desired to smoke tobacco to preserve himself from being injured. And secondly, our annual races commenced last Tuesday on Worthy Down and attracted a great influx of fashionable company.
And 100 years ago, Saturday, July the 20th, 1918. Two items. The Guildhall was packed to its full capacity on Saturday afternoon by wounded soldiers, for whom a dramatic entertainment had been arranged by Colonel and Mrs. Corkery. The artists were members of the Oscar Ashe Dramatic Party, who kindly gave their services, producing the comedy Her Husband's Wife, the many humorous situations which were thoroughly appreciated, and it was evident from the start that the Tommies spent a very enjoyable afternoon. And secondly, many heard with regret this week of the death, which occurred very suddenly on Monday evening, of Sergeant John Harold Reeves of the Rifle Records Office, who passed away at the early age of 49. The deceased, who was a native of Reading, came to Winchester from Guildford and was for 30 years in the printing department of Messrs Warren and Son Limited. For many years, he was a member of the choir of St Paul's Church. A few months after the outbreak of war, he expressed a desire to take up work of a national character, and early in 1915, he enlisted as clerk in the Rifle Records Office.
And 50 years ago, a number of roadside signs on the A31 New Alsford to Bishop Sutton Road are to be challenged by the North West Area Planning Committee. Following last month's meeting, a list of unauthorised signs was made. The signs include two referring to the strong country, one advertising a hotel, yoghurt, a car firm in Southampton, yet another bearing the inscription Visit St Nicholas Church, 12th century, one for a petrol company and one for a Winchester hotel. Mr Robin Beachy told the committee at its meeting on Monday that some of its signs might have been there since before 1948. He said they should be the subject of a notice served on the owners for them to seek permission to express consent within 28 days. Until challenged, advertisements prior to 1948 were deemed to be authorised, but they could be brought within notice by challenge. He added that the only cost payable for even a 1948 sign was the cost of the physical removal, and that ought to be small. Secondly, an application by the Ministry of Public Building and Works concerning the erection of a telephone exchange on a quarter acre, the former railway yards at Stockbridge, brought agreement between the Area Planning Officer, Mr. E.H.W. Bartlett, and the Chairman of Romsey and Stockbridge Development Subcommittee, Mr. P.D. Merridale. Mr. Bartlett told the meeting that Mr. Merridale felt strongly about the matter, and I must say that I agree with him, the planning officer added. This recommendation, in effect, is that you do not approve it in spite of the history and difficulties that will ensue. The planning officer's recommendation was that the ministry be informed that the siting and design of the proposed exchange was not approved in view of the prominence of the site and the detrimental effect a building of that size and design would have on the character of Stockbridge.
And from 25 years ago, a couple of items. The first one, very reminiscent of recent news. Burton's menswear store has become the latest in a line of chain stores to pull out of Winchester city centre. The shop in the middle of the High Street closed down just days after the summer sale was announced. The business has been transferred to the firm's Eastleigh store. But a spokesman for the Burton Group said the premises are to reopen as Dorothy Perkins, which is a member of the same group. The group's main concern is putting the customer first. The new management has looked at ways to serve the customers best, and they obviously feel that a Dorothy Perkins is what is needed for the women in that area. But she was unable to comment on the fate of the two existing Dorothy Perkins outlets in the city, one in the High Street and the other located within Debenhams. The number of empty shops in Winchester remains a clear indication that businesses are still reeling from the effects of the recession. Over the past year, a number of stores, some independently owned, have shut up shop in Winchester. Among the victims are Design and Craft, Cadogan and Co. Clothes Shop, Hunter and Oliver's Wine Merchants, and Right Up in the Square. Those that have pulled out of the High Street include Robert Norfolk Clothes Shop, Foster's Menswear, Dewhurst Butchers, Topshop, Gerard's Greengrocers, Curry's and John Menzies. The Brooks Collection recently shut down in St George's Street. And the second item, a South Wanston family's peaceful lunch was shattered on Saturday when a lightning bolt blasted into their house. Clive and Sandra Howell of Downlands Way were sitting in the kitchen with one of their sons, Gareth, at about 12:20 p.m. when a bolt from the blue hit the gable end of the house, blowing the bricks out of the wall and making a hole in the roof. At the time, they thought it was an explosion and police, firefighters and paramedics were on the scene within minutes. Fortunately, no one was hurt, but the bolt left a trail of damage throughout the house. The Howells' other son, Ashley, was lucky not to be in his bedroom at the time. A chunk of plaster was blown out of the wall and flew across the room, wrecking his favourite Jimi Hendrix poster. The light bulb and fitting in the room also shattered, spraying the room with splinters of glass. He said to the Chronicle, "My parents and brother were getting ready for lunch when there was this explosion and shockwave through the house. They didn't know what had happened until they went upstairs to my room." That's the historical items. Now we move on to editorial comment, first person in Belgarium. Belgarum. Claire, you've got the editorial comment, please.
It's headed, "Tackling the Biggest Killer of Men Under 50. Suicide is now the biggest killer of men aged under 50. Our report on the tragic death of Paul Smart, aged 37, again highlights the issue. Important research by the Samaritans has produced a report, Men and Suicide, Why It's a Social Issue, that deserves to be widely read. Suicide has become a major social and health problem that needs to be addressed as a matter of urgency. Men are far more likely to bottle things up than women, more likely to behave in dangerous ways with alcohol and drugs, more likely to be lonely. Traditional support networks, family, church, workplace, hobby clubs, can often be missing when most needed. Social media too, far from bringing people together, can easily become a way where vulnerable people feel even more isolated. The internet and modern life in general seems to prize power, control and invincibility, according to the Samaritans, creating a mental vortex for many people. As the Samaritans say, suicide prevention policy and practice must take account of men's views of what it is to be a man in the early 21st century. Much more needs to be said about this crisis of manhood. It's also time to end the traditional stigma around talking about mental health and to try to widen the debate on how we can all live a more meaningful and happier life."
And I have, I think, first person here, and it's headed "The Power of the People," and it's by Joanna Lewis. "For some of us, the healing process after the World Cup will take a while. Like millions, I was seduced by a man in a waistcoat with a gentle manner and a nose that moves in a different direction from the rest of his face. I invested in the dream. That Wednesday, I watched a game of football in a local pub for the first time. It was not the evening any of us wanted, for the joyful outburst after the England goal caused an ornament to fall off a high shelf and onto my skull. A week on, I still have concussion. I'm bruised, off work, and away with the fairies. Still, my minor head injury is nothing. Spare a thought for our wildlife and endangered species this summer. A trophy hunter just shot one of the last 30 long-tusked elephants in Zimbabwe. Icelandic company has slowly and painfully killed a protected blue whale. It's not just overseas. With grass dry and high, rescue centres have reported record number of horrific hedgehog casualties. Sweet faces and body parts slashed to pieces. It's Stribber Man, the horror movie. Apparently it's just too much bother to check the grass first and, God forbid, use manual clippers. And there's the continued onslaught on heritage trees. Recently, the last remaining apple trees from the weak estate were cut down by prospective developers, despite the fact that they house nests full of baby birds. 1 in 10 of our national species faces extinction. That's not fake news, and in our area we are pushing forward this tragic statistic because of the uncontrolled development and garden grabbing underway. We're currently in the grip of an unprecedented wave of overdevelopment of green spaces on a scale that would turn Monty Don, if he knew, into Attila the Hun. This newspaper has recently covered multiple examples of local residents protesting against the greed of developers, cramming 4, 5, 6 plus hefty-sized properties onto plots with a single dwelling and a large garden. What's being proposed for Alsford and Stockbridge, two outstanding areas of natural beauty, is downright criminal. Of course, some plots can take dividing up as they're large. But in the main, as local objections make perfectly clear, most developers are simply squeezing as much money as they can out of green space. They fly in the face of the enjoyed environmental amenity. They stick two fingers up to the local design statements. They run circles around planning and councillors, bullying and threatening. They're destroying the low ratio of buildings to green space that makes semi-rural areas so distinctive and important. Soon we'll be at a point of no return with regard to a balanced local ecosystem as so many gardens, trees and hedges are being destroyed. The habitat web, which supports the chain of insects, bees, flowers, trees and wild animals, which in turn supports human life through clean air and pollination, is being torn apart. Every developer's assault on our gardens makes a massive contribution to local habitat and species decline, and to global warming. They are the only invertebrates that are thriving. Hundreds of people across this area are quietly enraged at this plague of profiteering and at a planning process that stinks more than a stranded Thai caver's underpants. Dwell on that for a moment. Sure, we can all do our bit. Rewilding bits of garden, planting insect-friendly flowers, even micro-beekeeping. But together, I beg your pardon, but tougher council planning laws are desperately needed to protect gardens, trees, hedges and green fields from developers. We face an environmental Armageddon if we do not see action now. I draw two positive conclusions from having been hit on the head from watching the football. The first is to stick to watching rugby. And the second is not to underestimate the power of the collective when unleashed. When enough people stamp their feet, even the high and mighty can fall.
To the previous subject, this from Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. Winchester now has its own tribute to England following their successful World Cup run. Created by the communications team at Winchester City Council, a photoshopped version of a Southgate Street sign has been shared online with the words changed to Gareth Southgate Street, in tribute to the England manager. However, it seems there aren't any plans to permanently alter the street. Councillor Lisa Griffiths, portfolio holder for Sport and Leisure at the Council, said, "Following calls from local people caught up in the spirit of England's performance in the World Cup, the communications team reacted to requests to rename Southgate Street by mocking up a Photoshop image. There are currently no plans for Southgate Street to be permanently renamed in honour of the England manager."
Thank you. Now we move on to the announcements this week and what's on. Firstly, there's the Pop-Up Cafe, which is in aid of Holy Trinity Church at Wanston, returns to the Victoria Hall in Sutton Scotney on Wednesday the... Oh, I think that says the... Oh, it's the 1st of August. Sorry, I couldn't read my own writing. Wednesday the 1st of August. So home-baked cakes and biscuits, tea and coffee are offered from 9.30 till 12 o'clock. And there's another tea and cake event, this time at St Mark's Church Hall in Oliver's Battery Road on Thursday the 26th of July between 2 and 3.30 in the afternoon. And the proceeds from that will all go to the planned hospice at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Lastly, there is a special exhibition at Mottisfont, the National Trust property near Romsey, and that is on the author Judith Kerr, who wrote The Tiger Who Came to Tea. It was Judith's first book, published in 1968, and began as a bedtime story for her own children. There will be a display of original artwork and sketches at Mottisfont, and that's running through the summer season. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 20th of July at 5:12 a.m. and begins at 9:10 p.m. And next Wednesday the 25th of July, it ends at 5:20 a.m. and begins at 9:02 p.m. So if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870370. That's Irene Dowding on 01962 870370. And now we continue with items of general news. Claire.
This item is headed Hall Packed as Fears Expressed Over Plan. Residents in Otterbourne turned out for a packed meeting to voice objections to plans which will see thousands of homes built on the border between Winchester and Eastleigh. Otterbourne Parish Council, who opposed the plans, invited John Lawries from Action Against Destructive Development, AD, to give a talk instructing residents of the best way to show their objections. AD have so far raised £60,000 to hire a team of experts to battle the plans, which will see 5,200 new homes built near ancient woodland between Fair Oak and Bishopstoke. It was suggested that residents make their objections known in writing before the end of the consultation period, which runs until August the 8th. Mr. Lawwerys said that the development equated to building a town the size of Petersfield or three Colden Commons, and that the proposed new link road to the M3 via the Albrook Railway Bridge would cause traffic chaos in the area. The new road was originally talked about as a bypass. Councillor Keith House maintained it would be a bypass. He has said that as a result of the road in 2036, traffic will be no more congested than it is now. We believe it is going to get worse, and this new development will bring an additional 26,000 traffic movements a day. What happens when it's congested? People go through Twyford or Otterbourne, or they go through the small village of Oslebury and Upham. We believe there is going to be a huge increase in traffic. It's not a bypass in any sense of the word. What the people of the southern parishes will face is a massive increase in traffic. The plans, which form part of Eastleigh Borough Council's new local plan, were recently backed by Lib Dem leader Vince Cable, who said, "The basic strategy the council has adopted seems to be right, which is to build ambitious housing developments combined with a good environmental policy. My understanding is that they are trying to create garden villages to protect the green land between Eastleigh and Southampton. But the basic point is that this is an area that is desperate for new houses and there must be a substantial increase in supply. However, resident and former councillor Anne Bailey said that many Liberal Democrats do not support the plans and that Vince Cable has been hoodwinked. Following the consultation launch, Eastleigh Borough Council said, "Our plan outlines a vision for the borough to ensure development in Eastleigh Borough and its communities delivers a strong and sustainable economy with an adequate supply of housing and infrastructure that supports improved standards of living for residents."
Hundreds still in mixed-sex wards. Hundreds of Hampshire hospital patients are being placed in mixed-sex wards despite NHS trusts facing potentially steep fines. New data from NHS England revealed that 211 patients at University Hospital Southampton NHS Foundation Trust were placed in mixed-sex wards in the 12 months to April 2018, with the trust now facing a bill of up to £52,000. According to the new figures, 105 patients faced the same situation at hospitals in Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover over the 12-month period, with trusts having to pay up to £26,000. This comes despite the NHS constitution pledging that patients admitted to hospital will not have to share sleeping accommodation with patients of the opposite sex and have the right to be treated with dignity and respect. But while trusts blamed bed shortages and winter crisis, campaigners and patient groups said mixed sex accommodation do not provide patients with the dignity they should expect. Harry Dimond, chair of Health Watch Southampton, said the issue is regularly discussed with health bosses in the city. And although he said the figure relating to Southampton must be put into the context of the 150,000 patients treated in this city each year, he added, clearly there are some instances where a breach is most unwelcome, such as religious belief or for vulnerable patients, and the trust attempts never to breach in these circumstances. Health Watch monitors the situation carefully. We are assured that when a breach occurs, every effort is made to protect the privacy and dignity of the patient, and when possible, we confirm this. Following rules introduced in April 2011, hospital trusts face a £250 fine every time a patient is placed in a mixed-sex ward. Breaches of the rules cover any instance in which a patient is admitted and placed on a bed or trolley, even if they do not spend the night at the hospital. But due to the winter crisis that hit hospitals this year, the rules were relaxed in January and reintroduced in February.
And now relating to another local development plan entitled Grant Bid at Station Approach. You know this is a huge scheme when the improvements to the public realm are estimated at £5 million. Winchester City Council is aiming for a £150 million plus redevelopment of the station approach area that stretches from the railway station to the cattle market on Andover Road. The council is preparing to apply for a £5 million grant from the M3 Local Economic Partnership to create a more welcoming area around the train station, one where cyclists and pedestrians can feel at home, and which acts as a welcoming gateway to visitors to the city. Ian Cherry, head of programme at the City Council, told the Cabinet Station Approach Committee, "It will be a positive statement about the city for visitors and tourists and the 5 million people who use the station a year. There will be improvements to the hospital, the university and the city centre. A new hub." He said the vision was for the area to become a public space with pop-up events and informal music, rather than at present one in which people move through as fast as they can. The proposed development will see a massive office scheme of 140,000 square feet and housing. The first scheme collapsed in 2016 with councillors saying it was too big. The committee agreed to pay £225,000 to enable the design work to progress on the Station Hill and Station Road area. A bid to the LEP is expected by March 2019. It will have to be convinced that the whole £150 million scheme is viable. Councillors expressed some concern at the perceived level of risk. Rose Burns said she was worried that the development of the public realm strategy and the Winchester movement strategy may be too slow for the LEP deadline, and that the £5 million grant be lost. Another concern raised by Councillor Burns is the disruption to traffic flow, with a possible reintroduction of two-way traffic on Sussex Street happening after work starts on the new public realm, and impacting on the proposed two-way bus flow on Station Hill. Chas Bradfield, Strategic Director, said the possible risks would be reduced by the Council liaising with the LEP and other stakeholders, such as Network Rail and the County Council. Mr. Cherry said that the Chief Estates Officer, Kevin Warren, was talking to between 5 to 10 firms who were interested in moving into the new offices to end the shortfall of high-quality office space in the city.
World Cup celebrated. Two football teams with a difference came together to celebrate the World Cup in Winchester. Saints Ability, a group of disabled young men from across Hampshire, supported by Saints, took on King Alfred's Foot Soldiers, a Winchester-based walking football group with players aged over 50. The two teams met at River Park Leisure Centre to play in what organisers described as stifling heat. Despite the conditions, King Alfred's Foot Soldiers came out on top, although Saints Ability players are already calling for a future rematch.
And a topical issue. This summer of drought. Is this the new normal? For most Hampshire residents, you're likely to be waking up yet to another day without rainfall. The last significant rain was way back in May, and since then rainfall has been a fraction of what it normally is. Is this a new normal? Looking around my parched garden, I can quickly identify several species that simply aren't designed to tolerate this dryness or heat. Take many of our apple, plum and damsons. Planted for a cooler and wetter climate, they're really struggling. Apples are falling off trees while still small, and leaves on many fruiting species are dropping 3 months early. It's also bad news for allotment growers, with lettuces, peas and beans badly hit. Our wildlife is also struggling. Blackbird families, who right now should be feeding newly fledged young on worms, are having to search for smaller insects as the ground is far too hard to find their staple diet. This is likely to have a significant impact on not just blackbird, but also song thrush, green woodpecker and many other ground-feeding species. For our mammals too, the stress caused by the heat and the lack of places to find water is leading to a greater number of fatalities. Hedgehogs, voles, wood mice, stoats and weasels are still being impacted. So, 55 days into this drought, will this be the new norm? In short, probably yes. It's not just been a record-breaking year for the UK. Records have tumbled in virtually every European, African and Asian country. Climate change is here to stay. That doesn't mean it's just getting warmer. It means our weather patterns are changing. We can expect longer droughts, heavier and more intense rain, sudden snowfall, higher wind speeds in autumn, and storms and lightning strikes. Is there any action we can take to limit the impact of these changes? In the short term, it needs to be about limiting our water use. There are the obvious and easy steps, such as shallow baths rather than deep ones for those who can't have showers, showers rather than baths for those who are able to stand, avoiding sprinkler use and washing cars with a bucket and a sponge. But there are more creative things we can do as well, from installing water butts to collect any rain, through to putting bowls in every sink to capture water every time we turn on a tap, and covering ponds during the hottest parts of the day to limit the evaporation of water. So the new norm is upon us, and we would do well to adapt now for a more uncertain future.
On the very same subject, but with rather historical references, entitled Legend Says We're Set for Fine Summers, if we didn't know. People in England and Wales are in for a glorious dry summer, if the legend of St Swithin's Day is to be believed. But Scotland and Northern Ireland might not be so lucky. The legend states that if it rains on July the 15th, wet weather will persist for 40 days and 40 nights. England and Wales had a dry, sunny St Swithin's Day, with temperatures soaring as high as 32 degrees centigrade, while heavy rain fell in parts of Scotland and much of Northern Ireland. But Met Officer forecaster Rachel West allayed fears, as she said people who have enjoyed a dry Sunday will probably see some showers over next week, and vice versa. Certainly some changes in forecast over the next week, never mind the next coming 40 days, but if people want to believe in St Swithin's Day, then it's up to them, she joked. St Swithin was an Anglo-Saxon bishop of Winchester who died in 862. When he was made a saint in 971, his body was dug up and moved to an indoor shrine in the cathedral. Some writers claimed this outraged the heavens, causing rain to pour onto the church and continue interrupted for 40 days. But the Met Office said there had not been a record of 40 dry or 40 wet days following St Swithin's Day since records began in 1861.
Over 500 dangerous animals are kept as pets across the county. More than 500 dangerous animals are living across Hampshire as pets, new figures have revealed. Snakes, lizards, and African crocodiles are among those in the care of owners in the county. In total, 513 of the animals are registered at councils in the area. It comes as a survey commissioned by Born Free led to the foundation petitioning the government to review the law and to stop some of the world's deadly creatures being kept in what they call unsuitable environments. Those listed among the dangerous pets include wild boar, West African dwarf crocodiles, and six Western diamondback rattlesnakes. The foundation confirmed that these were registered through Winchester City Council, New Forest District Council, Portsmouth City Council, and Havant Borough Council. Dr. Chris Draper, head of animal welfare for Born Free, said, "The keeping of wild animals as pets is a growing concern. The widespread use of the internet has made it easier than ever to order or purchase a wild animal without clarification as to where it has come from or how it should be cared for. Born Free is calling for a review of the legislation covering the keeping of wild animals as pets and calling for more restrictions on the ownership of dangerous animals. Across Britain, there are more than 250 wild cats, 85 crocodiles, and at least 650 venomous snakes being kept as pets." Dr. Draper added, "Wild animals are particularly vulnerable to welfare problems because of their complex social, physical, and behavioural needs. They require specific housing conditions, dietary requirements, and furthermore, the safety risks these animals pose to their owners and the wider public should not be ignored. More than 1,500 people have signed the petition so far. Visit petition.parliament.uk/petitions/221050.
And another topical issue, county issues warning to be on tick alert. With scorching summer temperatures pulling residents into the sunshine, Hampshire County Council is stepping up its advice to adults and children to be tick aware while spending time outdoors. The authority says keeping to footpaths and avoiding long grass when out walking is the best way to avoid being bitten by ticks, which can carry bacteria that cause disease such as Lyme disease. Other advice to walkers in a wooded or health area, or heath area, known to have high tick population, such as the New Forest, includes wearing appropriate clothing in tick-infested areas, using insect repellents and dressing in brightly coloured clothes. Ticks are found in moist areas of dense vegetation or long grass in woodland, grassland, moorland, heathland and some urban parks and gardens. They can be found throughout the year but are most active between spring and autumn. If you do get bitten by a tick, removing it quickly and correctly can help to reduce any potential risk. The only safe way to remove a tick is to use a pair of fine-tipped tweezers.
And this entitled, Gran Hits Funds Goal with Run. A grandmother of triplets and twins smashed her fundraising goal after taking on a 10k run in aid of a twins and multiple births charity called acronym TAMBA. Dr. Jenny Livy from Shawford near Winchester ran the British 10k in London on Sunday, along with her two daughters, Susie and Ruth, in a bid to raise nearly £2,000 for TAMBA. The ex-head of science at St Swithin's School said, "TAMBA has given me and my children so much support and advice over the years that it is great to be able to give them something back and support them. This charity is such a help to parents and grandparents of multiples. Unless you have been involved with triplets or twins, you have no idea of what it's like." TAMBA also funds essential research into medical conditions affecting multiples, such as twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome and twin growth charts. Jenny, whose mother was a twin, first became a grandparent when her son Joseph became the father of triplet boys, Marcus, Toby and Josh. He has since had another son, Benjamin. Her daughter Susie has a girl, Matilda, and identical twins, Alice and Jemima. Her younger daughter Ruth has a girl, Isabella, and identical twins, Sophie and Emma. However, Jenny didn't get much time to train for the race, thanks to her 10 grandchildren under 5 years old. Commenting on the scorching conditions over the weekend, Dr. Livy said, "It was so hot, Virgin Sports put the event on red alert. I had hoped to be faster, but it certainly was not the day for it." So far, she has smashed her target of £1,750, raising £2,230.
Hyde Abbey finds to go on show. Finds from 2 years of archaeological digs in Winchester will go on display early next year. The Winchester City Museum will house the historically important artefacts that were uncovered in the Hyde 900 community digs. Among the discoveries made during the investigations of the Hyde Abbey were a series of voussoirs, wedge-shaped stones, excavated in the spring of 2017 and 2018. These were identified by leading archaeological experts, Professor Martin Biddle and Dr. John Crook, as being almost certainly from the cloisters of the abbey, which occupied the area until the 16th century. Also discovered were a baci, A-B-A-C-I, the flat base stones which act as a layer between a capital on the top of a column and the rest of the arch. Remarkably, these abaci matched exactly the Hyde Abbey capitals displayed in St. Bartholomew's Church, Hyde. As a result, a cloister arch has been able to be reconstructed in full to provide unprecedented insight into the appearance of a major feature within the medieval abbey. David Sperling, who led the project on behalf of Hyde 900, said, "To have now a complete set of capital, abaci and voussoirs is enormously satisfying. The beautiful capitals in St. Bart's had given us a clue as to what the cloisters might have looked like, but to have discovered the highly decorated voussoirs as well as clarified just how impressive the cloisters would have appeared in their heyday. The arch deserves to be prominently displayed so that residents and visitors get a better understanding of the significance of the abbey's architecture and status." Mr. Sperling also paid tribute to the generosity and public spirit of King Alfred Terrace householders Chris and Anne Pryor, Justine Fields and Chris Scott, who allowed hundreds of volunteers to excavate their gardens. He said, "Without the enthusiasm and support of the King Alfred Terrace residents, none of this would have happened. It is now even more generous of the Pryors to permit the stones found in their backyard to go on public display. After further restoration, the arch will be viewable in the City Museum, which is operated by Hampshire Cultural Trust, after refurbishment of the first floor in early 2019. Janet Owen, Hampshire Cultural Trust Chief Executive, said, "The finds are a poignant reminder of the sheer destruction of Henry VIII's dissolution of the monasteries. All that remains of the abbey today is its impressive gatehouse. So the reconstructed arch offers an important and extremely rare glimpse into the interior of this once magnificent minster."
Two escape injury in air crash. Two people had an amazing escape from serious injury after a light aircraft crashed in countryside south of Winchester. The aircraft came down in woodland in Morstead near Twyford on Saturday afternoon. Emergency services were alerted at around 3:15 p.m. with firefighters from stations at Winchester, Eastleigh, Redbridge and Bishop's Waltham all attending. Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service said that the two occupants of the plane clambered free and were in the care of the ambulance service. On social media, police tweeted those inside had been two of the luckiest people in the UK and walked away with only scratches. The Air Accident Investigation Branch in Farnborough has been informed.
And this one entitled Chicken Shed Set to Become New Homes. A former chicken shed near Winchester is set to be converted into housing following approval from planners. The site at North Winchester Farm in Kingsworthy will now be converted into three homes. The change of use of the building was allowed by Winchester City Council under permitted development rights, available to convert redundant agricultural buildings. However, the scheme did cause concerns, including from Kingsworthy Parish Council, who objected. They said the scheme did not fit in with the local plans, and added that there was a lack of affordable homes. Resident Gordon Lockhart also raised concerns over the impact of additional traffic. The scheme was designed by architects Provision, who said there would only be minor changes to the outside of the building. The plans would include dividing the barn into three homes, with new internal walls, windows, doors and roofs. Built in 1990, the former poultry building was used for free range and barn egg production until April 2017. Richard Osborne, senior planner at Provision, said, "The closure of the poultry business at North Winchester Farm in 2017 as a result of changes within the industry meant alternative uses for the building had to be considered. The proposal at North Winchester Farm is an exciting project that is fully compliant."
Students help launch hall with week of community activities. The Mayor of Winchester attended a launch event for a community centre in Winnall following a week of activities spearheaded by pupils from a Winchester school. 25-year 11 girls from St Swithin's School helped relaunch the Unit 12 Community Centre in Winnall as part of a three-day project organised by Community First's volunteer service. The recently renovated centre in Winnall Valley Road, which provides activities for 8 to 18-year-olds and elderly residents, features a cafe, activity rooms, dance studio, a meeting room and garden with barbecue. Louise Todino, director of Unit 12, said, "I have thoroughly enjoyed working in partnership with Community First and St Swithin's to open our doors to the public to see what we do here. I would like to take this opportunity to thank all 25 girls from St Swithin's who have given up their precious time to help out with the activities for the launch. They have been amazingly all through. Activities over the 3 days included pamper sessions, first aid training, walking football, gardening, yoga, table tennis, social media training and music workshops. Among the highlights over the 3 days were visits from Winnall Primary School children, where three different year groups took part in a music and dance workshop. Robin Williams, local resident and parent of Daisy from Year 3, said, "I've enjoyed spending time with my daughter, Daisy, at Unit 12 today. It's great that they are trying to bring together different sections of the community to find out what's going on at the centre."
Emmaus celebrates growth. A sunny summer garden was the perfect setting of a homeless charity in Emmaus, Hampshire, to celebrate the launch of three extra flats at its Winchester base, as well as its new website. Emmaus provides a unique solution to the region's homeless community. Its new rooms have the total number up to 29. Emmaus now has ambitions to develop its community further, adding an additional 8 rooms, subject to planning approval. Emmaus was delighted to welcome to the party all its stakeholders to celebrate its expansion. Over 100 people attended the event, including supporters, companions, homeless individuals, trustees and staff. Chief Executive Nigel Samuel said, "Our garden party is a fantastic event, celebrating those that support us, the companions and everyone's hard work." Companion Cliff, who welcomed guests to the show flat, said, "The new rooms are excellent. It's great to see our Winchester community expanding to be able to help others in a situation that I was once in." The party was also attended by the Mayor and the Lord Lieutenant.
And now a bit of a warning, entitled "Man Loses £3,000 to Pickpockets in City Centre." Police are hunting two men after an elderly man had £3,000 cash stolen from his jacket pocket in Winchester. CCTV images have now been released by Hampshire Constabulary after the 74-year-old had withdrawn the money from Nationwide on the High Street. Then he put the money in an envelope in his pocket. It is believed that two Eastern European men saw the withdrawal and targeted the elderly man. Later, the victim was looking in the window of Donna Lane Jewellers in Parchment Street at about 3 p.m. on July the 5th, when one of the men was seen putting a jacket over his shoulder and, from the bottom of it, dipping his hand into the victim's pocket and stealing the envelope. The suspects also attempted to distract the victim in conversation. One of the suspects is described as white, aged between 25 and 35, stocky and with short, dark, receding hair. He was wearing jeans, a dark-coloured polo shirt and sunglasses on his head. The second suspect is also aged between 25 and 35, stocky and with light brown, receding hair.
Delays over finish date for M27 scheme. A multi-million pound bridge replacement scheme that will close the M27 will now be completed 2 months later than planned. A £19 million project to knock down and replace the Romsey Road Bridge has been pushed back. Highways England, leading the scheme, has said that due to extra refinements and environmental work, the project will now finish in October 2019, 2 months later than had been quoted in February this year. It means the dates of the three weekend closures have also shifted. Bosses had hoped that over the first weekend closure, the west side would be demolished, with the east bridge then carrying the A3057 traffic both ways, using temporary traffic lights, while the new bridge was built alongside it. The second closure would see the new bridge lifted into place, with the final closure seeing the east bridge demolished before the new bridge is fully open to two-way traffic from August next year. Now, the first closure will take place between September the 28th until October the 1st, and the second will be between April the 26th and April the 29th, 2019. The final closure will be October the 18th until October the 21st. Highways England said the project has been affected by legislative changes to the environmental assessment process. This means we now need to extend the amount of work which is required to enable us to start work. Due to the extra refinements and environmental work needed, we have now consulted surrounding local authorities to agree three new weekend overnight closure dates. Infrastructure work began in March, and a weight limit was put on the bridge 2 years ago to prolong the life of the bridge until the main work began.
City Council's financial position is getting better, apparently. Civic chiefs have revealed a positive outlook for council finances in Winchester. The City Council's latest financial figures show the authority currently has a surplus of £1.8 million. According to the council, it's now in a good position to cope with future challenges, thanks to, quotes, strong financial stewardship and, quotes, additional income generated. Of the £1.8 million surplus, £1 million has already been allocated to deliver services in the current financial year, and a further £789,000 will go into general reserves to help support services and protect potential financial instability in the future. The figures come amid the significant fiscal tests due to the removal of much government grant, rising demand on services, and the resetting of the council's business rates. Portfolio holder for finance, Councillor Guy Ashton, said, "I'm very pleased with this set of financial reports. We've shown a strong set of financial figures and some really positive progress. The financial pressure on the council and local government as a whole is likely to continue long into the next decade. We've been preparing for this, and a number of our projects have long-term financial opportunities to support all of our services."
And in all this hot weather, this one entitled "Water Leak Closes Car Park Exit." Drivers were stopped from using a Winchester City car park exit on Monday afternoon to allow for emergency water repairs. Winchester City Council closed off the Tower Street car park exit for safety reasons at about 1 p.m. A spokesman said signs are in place to point customers to the upper level where they can leave onto Sussex Street. "We apologise for any inconvenience caused." According to workmen at the site, the work was being carried out on a burst water main and it was expected to take a few hours to fix. A Hampshire County Council spokesperson added, "Following a mains water leak at the exit of the basement car park at Elizabeth II Court in Winchester, Southern Water is carrying out emergency repairs and pumping the excess water away from the site."
Amazing grandmother killed in crash. Tributes have been paid to an amazing grandmother who died after a car crashed into a cash point machine at a Hampshire supermarket. Doris Lush, who's 86, of Park Road in Chandler's Ford, suffered serious leg injuries in the incident at the Morrison's store in Totten and died shortly after being taken to Southampton General Hospital. She was with a 22-year-old woman, also from Chandler's Ford, who suffered what police describe as life-changing injuries in the accident. In a statement issued yesterday, Mrs. Lush's family described her as an exceptional woman, a wonderful mother, and an amazing grandmother. The statement added, "Her death has sent shockwaves through our family. Words cannot express the sense of loss in such a tragic incident." A police spokesman said officers were still investigating the accident outside the store in Spruce Drive, West Totten. The driver of the car, a 76-year-old woman from Totten, suffered minor injuries and was also taken to Southampton General Hospital. Floral tributes, some bought by Morrison's customers, have been placed at the scene of the tragedy. Supermarket staff rushed to the women's aid and were greeted by scenes described as horrific by people who were outside the store at the time.
Hall plans taken over. A community group's plans to modernise their parish hub may well be lost forever, according to campaigners. It comes after a church group withdrew support for the bid to build a modern space in Oliver's Battery. However, the parochial church council of St Luke and St Mark have now confirmed that they will progress with their own project instead. Campaigners had been hoping to replace the ageing St Mark's Church Hall, which campaigners say is living on borrowed time, with a new facility. But those plans have been scuppered after the parish council ripped up an agreement, meaning the group no longer has the land to build on. Writing in the parish magazine, Ian Miller, chairman of the Oliver's Battery Community Centre group, said, "Oliver's Battery will remain the only parish in the area that does not have its own community centre. Although the parochial church council will have its reasons for this withdrawal, and it is for the Reverend Ed Dines to explain these and not me, the opportunity to provide suitable community, social and health facilities in the parish may well be lost forever." Paul Draper, a fellow trustee of the group, added, "Having been much involved with others in the project for the last 6 years, I'm deeply saddened by the abrupt change." Speaking to the Chronicle, the Reverend Ed Dines, the new chairman, claimed that there had been a lot of false information spread and that the decision had been taken by the parochial church council, not himself. He said, "The development will progress. We're looking forward to providing something that is both church and community use. We as a church want to reach out to the community ourselves.
And this one touched on a little earlier, entitled Checklist to Help Save Endangered Hedgehogs. Hedgehog rescue charities are appealing for people to take more care when using garden strimmers. The charities are seeing a large number of seriously and fatally injured hedgehogs harmed by the strimmers. In recent decades, the number of hedgehogs has been in steep decline. The charities advise: 1. Try to use hand tools to cut low grass. 2. The ground is very dry for young hedgehogs. Leave water out in secluded places. 3. Keep an eye on the more wild, messy parts of your garden where hedgehogs might nest. If possible, corner off the area so your dogs can't attack them. And 4. Never feed hedgehogs human food. It is much better to make sure there are gaps in fences for hedgehogs to move around between gardens to forage.
Tweaks in new lodge kitchens. Work has been taking place at Winchester's recently opened housing complex to help disabled residents. Winchester City Council has been making adaptations at the new Chesil Lodge extra care site to meet specific needs. A spokesman said work has taken place at flats to ensure that they meet the residents' personal requirements. That has included altering some kitchens to ensure residents can fully utilise them. We were pleased to have carried out these adaptations before the residents moved in, meaning that they would benefit from them as soon as they arrived. All the fixtures and fittings that were replaced by more accessible options have been retained for future use, so will not be wasted. The £16 million development, a joint venture between the city and county councils, features a mixture of one and two bed apartments designed for the over 55s. The complex is the first extra care development in Hampshire and allows couples with differing care needs to still live together.
Fatal asbestos. A childless Ford man died after exposure to asbestos, an inquest heard. Ian McIntyre, of Cuckoo Bushes Lane, was diagnosed with a form of cancer linked to the substance in January 2017. Mr. McIntyre had been a builder and previously an apprentice with British Rail in Eastleigh, where it's believed he was exposed to the material. The 56-year-old died at Countess Mountbatten House on February the 28th. Coroner Graham Short recorded a conclusion of death due to industrial disease.
And this one entitled Pavilion Boost. The Pavilion project teamed up with the Racketeers Cricket Club to host a sixes tournament on North Wall's recreation ground last Sunday. The group, which is fundraising for a new pavilion at North Wall's, invited teams from local businesses to take part in the day so that they could learn more about the Pavilion project and the benefits of sponsoring the building. Three other teams took part in the event from Moorblatch, Savills and Rathbones. Speaking about the project, coordinator Mike Caldwell said, "The new pavilion at North Wall's represents an excellent opportunity for business sponsorship. The building will be in use all year round by a variety of sports and non-sports groups and is located in a key city centre location with high footfall and visibility. The new pavilion, designed by local architects AR Design, has the potential for positive brand association through entering the stunning new building for National Architectural Awards too. On Sunday, the cricketers were treated to a lunch next to the existing pavilion, cooked by amateur chef Hamid Al-Mukhtar, who specialises in Middle Eastern cuisine. The Pavilion project is currently running a crowdfunding campaign, which has passed the halfway mark of its £5,000 target.
Extraordinary Women. Children from a Hampshire school will see their work displayed to the public as part of an exhibition celebrating the work of extraordinary women. Five pupils from Hairstock Primary School reached the finals of the Winchester Heritage Open Days Art and Words competition, which will see their work displayed as part of an exhibition in Winchester's Great Hall. The competition celebrated both women locally and nationally who have made a difference or brought about change in their communities. The children created a piece of artwork and a piece of writing celebrating pioneering women. The extraordinary women chosen by children included family members as well as those they have been inspired by. The exhibition will be open to the public on September 8th and 9th and 15th and 16th.
That concludes the extracts for this week, so thank you to our editors, Liz and Gordon Clegg. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Claire Porter.
Bye.
Richard Martin.
Bye.
And Peter Walker.
Bye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, not forgetting to place the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.